this edition of the Hagman and the Hagman Report. Dr. Bill Warner is our guest. He's not holding anything back. He's the beloved, he's beloved by the Southern Poverty Law Center. You know, he does tell it like it is with respect to, with Islam. And folks, you might look, the news is the news. We've got a problem with, we have a problem with domestic violence here in this country. Of course, the shooting in Virginia. You've got all of the headlines. We're on the verge of a civil war. And it's my belief. It's our belief. You've got a number of things taking place.
And the political violence.
It's important
to make that distinction. I listened to a little bit of Savage today.
Yes.
And he talked about the last time that representatives were attacked. I believe it was 1954 when the Capitol building was attacked by the Puerto Ricans.
Yes. That's a fascinating story. Mm-hmm. Historical account, by the way.
One of the shooters, a lady, was just released a few years ago from prison, if I remember correctly. But yeah, that 1954 was, at least from what he showed, was the last time there was, an attack that they tried to assassinate congressmen.
Yes. But all of this, again, as we had talked initially from beginning of the program, we are part of this mosaic, and a big part of this mosaic, understanding this mosaic, is Dr. Bill Warner in his expertise in explaining to us what is taking place in this country as well as throughout the world with respect to Islam and the imposition of Islam and the willingness of the Catholics, of the Protestants, of the Christians, the wussification. And I love it. Right before the break, you know, we're being wusses. And see, it's my view as a Christian man, it's my responsibility to protect my family. And if I don't protect my family, then I'm worthless. I'm worse than an infidel if I,
right?
You know, and look, I won't be the first to draw blood, but I'll tell you something. I will answer that appropriately.
And what Dr. Warner said about the Christian churches being involved in bringing the refugees here, even getting paid to do so. We had Josh Tolley on a month or so ago, and he talked about the refugee programs that these churches and Catholic charities are involved with, and what was it, $2,500 a head they were getting. So there is, you do have the bleeding hearts out there, the bleeding heart Christians. And when I say that, I don't mean Christians who have compassion, for others and want to help others. I mean those who just are. There was an interview on Tucker Carlson yesterday, and I guess this is a better way to explain it. And it was about the mentality that left. And I don't know who the guest was. It was in the first 20 minutes of a show where they talked about the contrast between the right and the left, and how many who are conservatives are Christians and have faith in Jesus. And, that is their moral compass. But these people on the left, many of them are atheists, and they believe a lot of these social issues, like climate change and healthcare, this is their moral compass, and they don't have a religion, so this is their religion to them, this socialist ideology. And whether it's misguided good intentions.
That's pretty twisted, actually.
It is, but it made a lot of sense. And, I wonder how much of it is the lack of understanding of what Islam really is. Versus, how many Christians do you know that understand what Islam is and what it, is attempting to accomplish, would continue to do what they're doing and continue, promoting Islam if they had that information? I don't think many people could be even considered Christians if they had that information and continue to do
I totally agree with that. And some of the other things in addition to that, I'd like to get Dr. Warner's take on Andre Carson and the other guy in Congress, two Muslims in Congress. How can that even be? Get sworn in on the Quran. John Brennan, former head of the CIA, converted to Islam, according to the FBI, one FBI source. You've got DHS infiltration of Muslims. You've got the just ripping out all Islam training quotes and such. So all of
those are my materials.
Yes. So, well, let's, come on in, Dr. Werner. Let's continue. You were saying about wusses. I love it. Just go, continue.
Well, this just goes to my philosophy of I say to the loser, you need to look at your game. You need to understand that you are losing first off and that you want to be a winner. Then why don't you examine why you're losing and why you're not winning? And by the way, I don't want to be harsh on everybody. I usually say that I'm only condemning 95% of the ministers. I don't condemn them all. There are literally a handful. And maybe it's even, but they range from 1 in 10 to 1 in 20. And these have become shy people. Now, it's okay to be humble, but that's not to be distinguished, that needs to be distinguished from being shy. And these people are, I mean, I just don't understand how they don't care. They call themselves people of compassion and want to help the Muslim refugees. I don't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem where you don't help the Christians at all. And I mean, I just don't understand this. I don't understand why. Here's an example. This was told to me by someone who went to a Methodist seminary. There was a woman there who had identified herself as a former Muslim and converted to Christianity. You know what she was asked? Well, why would you quit being a Muslim? That's a perfectly good religion. This is at a Methodist seminary that they're saying, well, why would you want to become a Christian instead of being a Muslim? I mean, it's a little hard for me to understand, but it appears to me that what has happened is that the scriptures are no longer in use in the churches at all, and instead what they're doing is they're listening to the New York Times and the Wall Street and New York Times and NPR.
Right, exactly.
That's exactly it.
And, you know, my statement is, what the hell's wrong with you? To even ask a question like that or to make a statement like that. Obviously, Christians and Muslims, we do not worship the same God. That's a lie that was...
Oh, let me interrupt here.
Go ahead, please.
Well, I talked with a woman at David Lipscomb who was in a class, and she said that they do not worship the same God. And the professor said, Christians and Muslims worship the same God, and that's as far as this discussion will go. In other words, sit down and shut up.
Okay.
This is at a Christian university. By the way, the same Christian university gave a whole seminar on the beauties of Sharia finance. Brought in a woman who's a Muslim who works with CARE to talk about the wonderful position that Islam was the first to give women their rights. This is at a so-called Christian university.
Unbelievable. Well, believable, yes. Well, okay. And we have to always mention CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, unindicted co-conspirators, and the Holy Land Foundation trial. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. All right. We've covered a lot of ground, but more to cover. You made an important distinction too about the refugees, about Europe, how Europe is being changed, and you said basically that, they're allowing that change or inviting that change, allowing it upon themselves. Here in America,
yes.
I mean, here in America, what are we doing? I mean, we're doing the same thing.
Yes.
And now Donald Trump, his so-called Muslim ban, which I would like it to be that. I believe it would be important for it to be that. What's your take on what's taking place with that?
Well, he's pushing against a tide. And I think that I don't want to get off too much into Trump because I learned something of that. I like to deal with political Islam, and which I'm an expert, and I'm not an expert on Trump. I read the same news sources you do.
Sure.
But he is pushing against a tide that's been in motion now for some time.
Okay.
And he is having a lot of difficulties, and I'm not sure how many things he can hammer on. I have learned one thing though from court cases such as this and others. When I was young, I thought that courts dealt in justice, but instead what they deal with is legal decisions.
Very good distinction, yes.
And by the way, why is it that Trump has to do all this work to keep the Muslims out? Do you realize what would happen if there was a mass rally and 500,000 Christians showed up to demand that not another Muslim come into this country until we got in some Christians? But where is that mass demonstration? Where is the pressure that he... Look, what is... We live in a world, by the way, we're in a sort of moral inversion. The way society normally is supposed to work is this, is that ministers and religious people are supposed to be the exemplars of a moral position. That is, you should look at the minister and see moral courage and moral, and they're on the right side of issues. Well, are we seeing that? No, we're not. Because what is happening is those who should be delivering the moral message, they want politicians to do it for them. So traditionally, politicians are considered to be the scum of the earth, something you wipe off your shoe when you leave the house, okay? And instead, what we see is that we now expect politicians to be the moral leaders. And indeed, in many cases, I've read public statements by congressmen about the persecution of Christians in the Middle East, which I do not find coming out of the churches. Again, we're leading a life, a society in which there's a moral inversion. Those who are supposed to be examples of moral leadership, the churches, instead look to the politicians and say, please take care of this because we don't have the guts to do so.
Mm.
Wimps.
Amen to that. All right.
I mean, whatever happened to righteous anger? Whatever happened to moral outrage? Whatever happened to that?
I think you said earlier, people question. Are afraid to a big extent. The media has done such a great job at brainwashing the majority of the American public to accept Islam and to accept this, you know, crazy communist socialist anti-American ideology. And I think, you know, those people that wholeheartedly accept that, that's one thing. But then there, you talk about the silent majority out there. I think people are timid and they're afraid of the backlash of, you know, these other people out there.
But
I think that's a big part of it. I mean, if they could just get past that initial fear, maybe we could, you know, have something to work with.
But what's it going to take, though, Joe? I mean, and Dr. Warner, what's it going to take?
I don't know.
A crucifix dipped or in a container of urine. That doesn't affect, you know, there's no outrage.
Right.
There's no
cartoon about Muhammad.
Christian sex slaves in Islamic State. Torture deaths. What? I mean, if torture deaths and women being set up as rape slaves, if that doesn't get, because they're Christian, if that doesn't get a Christian's ire up, what will?
Amen.
I'm serious. What will make anyone morally outraged anymore? They're also busy being well-liked and nice. Everyone wants to be socially well-adjusted. And by that, they mean not criticized. I was lucky. I was raised by a woman who was my grandmother who would tell the truth if it hair-lipped the devil. And I caught her disease, which is telling the truth. Now, by the way, I catch some flack. But look, I find that when I was young, I was thought you judged a man by his friends. But as an old man, I'm telling you, you want to judge a man by his enemies. And you know what's the problem with some of these ministers? They don't have any enemies.
Of course not. It's bad for business.
Bad. You know, that's another thing. I think there's more talk about mortgages than there is about how to help the world.
Yeah. It's sad, isn't it? I mean, it's...
Well, I'll tell you what's really sad. Nashville, Tennessee used to be called the buckle on the Bible Belt. You don't hear that anymore because everybody realized that if Islam, if Nashville is the buckle on the Bible Belt, let me tell you, the church's pants are down around its ankles.
Okay. That's a good one indeed.
But let me tell you, a Muslim will never be safer in his love of Islam than he will be in the city of Nashville, Tennessee. There's a church on every fifth corner, but they're just brick buildings with a white steeple.
Speaking of churches, though, Dr. Bill Warner, who we're talking with, and politicalislam.com is his website. Speaking of churches, one thing that we have noticed over the past decade and a half, actually longer, but specifically since, since 9/11. I'll leave it at that. We have seen this takeover of churches. And I first noticed this in Buffalo, New York. Tom Bowerly, WBEN AM 930, is on this show all the time. We would be talking about the different infiltration, Lackawanna 6 and such. But having said that, that got us into a area of research where we found that many churches were being purchased by the Islamic Society of North America or other Muslim organizations. What's your observation on that, Dr. Warner?
Well, then the churches aren't needed anymore because people aren't there. And I think that one of the reasons that people are not there is that the, you know, people hunger to do something that is good and right. And they also hunger for a little things that's, at least I believe this, I'm getting ready to make a point here, which is that people don't necessarily prosper when everything is smooth as silk, that sometimes a little tough work is necessary. We have four branches of the military. You know the only branch of the military that always more than meets its enrollment requirements? U.S. Marines. And what do they tell a young teenager? We do the roughest, toughest, hardest, meanest jobs in the world. And I used to be 18. I'm now 76. But when I was 18, if you told me that, I'd be like, yeah, give me some of that. That is, to do something difficult, to do great work. And the churches are no longer involved in great work. They're just sort of involved in selling fire insurance.
Good point. Good point. All right. Dr. Warner, take us where, or Joe, were you going to jump in? I was going to say, take us where you want to take us, because there's so many directions we can go in. I noticed that you've got some online, learning, courses, and of course all of your materials are great, but if you want to mention that and, tell us about that and how we should and could, can, enlighten ourselves about, Islam through your investigative research.
Well, what has happened is I'm a scientist by training, and so what that means is I want to understand the theory that underlies any phenomena. And so in my teaching of Islam, what I want to teach people is the voice of Muhammad and the voice of Allah. So all of my books that I sell are not my opinion, but facts that you can find in the original documents. I sell a Quran, for instance, which has the remarkable quality of you can pick it up and read it and understand it. And the reason is I took the original Quran and made it, I won't go into the details, but so that my goal is to make it easy to understand difficult material. The Life of Muhammad, the Sirah, is 800 pages long and fine print in the most difficult academic prose I've ever read. So in my books, I sell two of them. One of them's a 200 page and the other's only 80 pages. But the beauty of my books is anyone can pick up and read them and understand them. My Life of Muhammad, for instance, I gave it to a 14-year-old girl and gave her $20 if she'd read it, and she could read and understand the Life of Muhammad. That is, this is a person in high school. So my materials are easy to read, and they're the original material that's been transformed into being easy to read. I do not deal in opinions, I deal in facts. And so what I've done is I've structured all this material. My favorite job that I've ever had was a teacher. I couldn't believe that you'd get paid for talking and getting about something you liked and getting money for it. And so my goal is to not impress some people with how smart I am, but instead of how easy I've made the material to understand. So you can learn Islam from me, and you always know if you're learning Islam, if it's not the word of Allah or the actions of Muhammad, you're not learning Islam. Everything I do is referenced back to that. So I sell training courses. My books put together in a whole self-study course format, and you can get my books in audio format, print format, electronic format, and I've left, audio books. Did I mention that? So anyway, I'm a teacher, and I teach about the subject of political Islam. Now then, what I would love to do is to be able to give up my job because I couldn't sell any books because the universities and schools were doing their job they're supposed to be doing, and then people wouldn't need me at all. So my dream is a society in which my books wouldn't sell because everybody already knows what I'm trying to tell them.
It's a shame that, I know we already covered this a little bit, but it's a shame when what you just said, that the content of your books basically are going to be are shadow banned like they do on Twitter from, you know, institutions of education. And it just goes back to this mentality of, and I call it, it's like a Stockholm syndrome, identifying and basically falling in love with your enemy. That's how I see this, this love for Islam in the, not so much in the media, because I know where the media is coming from. This is part of the globalist agenda to deconstruct our society and our constitution to bring America down. But the people who believe that they're doing the right thing by embracing Islam and censoring the truth, that's such a, I mean, when this world's all over and done with, and we're all, you know, looking at a judgment, I hope these people realize one day what they really done, because it's insanity.
And Dr. Warner, really in your human rights Sharia Wrongs, May 25th. I really like that, that column you wrote. Islam claims to have the supreme ethical system in Sharia. And then you delineate how Sharia compares to the UN Declaration of Human Rights in 1948. And inarguably, it's inconsistent, of course, with human rights. It's antithetical to human rights. And so, Dr. Warner, the Linda Sarsour, what's her, how is it possible? And I know this is an extension of what we've been talking about, but her popularity among feminist groups, explain that to me, us.
Well, the only way I can explain it is in some sort of sickness, because Sharia, let's go back to, if I were in a Sharia protest, I'd say, I oppose Sharia wife beating. Look, any doctrine which involves a doctrine including how the code of how to treat women, which includes how to properly beat your wife, I mean, why do I even have to go further with this? And why is it when this Linda lady says these things about that, you know, you'll love Sharia because you won't be paying any interest on loans?
Yeah.
That sounds like a better credit card offer, perhaps, but it's simply not true. You don't pay interest, you pay a leasing fee. Who cares what you call it? It's money you have to put out of your pocket to get the business deal. So she can say all these things because the people who listen to her and applaud her don't know Sharia from Shinola. They don't know anything at all about it, so they believe everything that she says. And they don't want to be rude and interrupt her with the truth. Oh, let me brag here for a moment. You were talking about my books.
Yes.
My book, Sharia Law for Non-Muslims, is Amazon's best seller in Islamic law.
Okay.
Cool, huh?
Sharia, oh, yeah, I love it. Sharia Law for Non-Muslims, right? That's the title. Okay.
And it's the best seller on Amazon in the category of Islamic law. Now, I'll admit that's a narrow niche, but hey, I'm the best. You're talking to a best-selling author here.
Yes, we are.
And thank you. Seriously, even though that niche might be small relative to other categories, that is not to be taken lightly.
No,
and congratulations. Really. It's an honor to talk to you. And Sharia Law for Non-Muslims, extremely important work of Dr. Bill Warner. I would recommend everyone to grab a hold of a copy of that. And that will give you the ammunition, I believe. And correct me if I'm wrong, it will give you the ammunition to have an intellectual discussion or debate with these morons that are holding up the signs saying, you know, we love Muslims and Muslim, you know, come on, it's Sharia's okay. Everything's going to be fine under Sharia.
I might even have you to cause you to have a debate with your minister.
There
your
you
rabbi,
go.
Or your cousin.
Okay. I love it.
You know, and that's an interesting point that you just made. People who listen to the show, who attend churches, who interact with their pastors, we should engage with the pastors and find out where they stand. And if we find out that they, you know, are of the mindset that, you know, Islam and Christianity worship the same God or anything we talked about tonight, send them to politicalislam.com. Give them some material. Part of this is we need to reach out. As our lack, as you said earlier, we're losing the information war. Well, we need to expand that information war then. And at least you've done your part by bringing the truth to these people. And at least it's somewhere to start.
Would you recommend, Dr. Warner, that book?
Yes.
Okay. Anything in addition to that, or would that be sufficient to
admit? Actually, what I would recommend is I sell a collection of four. By the way, I sell two kinds of books, big books and little books. there's a story behind this. The book Sharia Law for Non-Muslims, I was lobbying an anti-Sharia bill in the Tennessee legislature, and I had a senator tell me I don't have time to do any reading. I don't even have time to read the bills put in front of my face. I said to myself, you just told me that you won't read a big book on Sharia. So I came home and I called up my printer and I said, how many pages are in 1/8 of 1 inch? He said, 54 pages. So I wrote a 54-page book called Sharia Law for Non-Muslims. It's sold by the tens of thousands. And I also sell a 480-page Quran, which sells by the dozens. So I went, whoa, wait a minute, the clue phone is ringing. People will not read a big book, but they will read a little book. So therefore, my books all appear in a big book form and a little book form. Hey, if the man wants a red suit, you turn on the red light, right? So Sharia Law for Non-Muslims was my first little book, and it, like I say, it sells by the tens of thousands.
Okay, and we're going to have to order. Because I know several pastors that should get a copy of that book, and so we're going to have to order a number of copies.
Our guest is Dr. Bill Warner. PoliticalIslam.com is the website. PoliticalIslam.com is the website. We're coming up against a break in about 1 minute. And folks, if you missed the first few segments with Dr. Warner, I don't know how many people saw this, the perfect man billboard. We were talking about this and the reporting that was being done by the local Indiana news, both in print and on the TV, about interviewing other Muslims, how they were so appalled by what was on this billboard and how it was hate speech and it wasn't true and there are misconceptions. But Dr. Warner laid out through the life of Muhammad how this is very accurate and how these claims are not misconceptions, how they're not lies. They are facts and tenets of the life of Muhammad. Folks, when we come back, we're going to continue with Dr. Bill Warner in our final segment. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family, MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow, it's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Caring Close in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We are offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changecoastandwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
For non-Muslims, number one best-selling book on Amazon. Gotta tell you, it's a small, short book in the Islamic, yeah, number one in the Islamic, let me get the right genre here in Islam and then subgenre law. So, that's something to be very proud of. And, Dr. Bill Warner holds a PhD in mathematics and physics, and he's been a university professor, businessman, and applied research physicist. Not your typical, I mean, he knows what he's talking about. I was reading some of the comments of, some people at a popular political forum that's, democratic and it's kind of underground, but I won't name the forum. And they were making fun of the people who are afraid of Sharia law. And afraid of Muslims holding public office. What do you say, Dr. Warner, about Muslims holding public office in America?
Well, they're compelled by, they identify themselves as Muslims and run with that flag and they're under that banner. Their number one commandment is to spread Islam. And that's not quite true, it's to spread Sharia. Muslims don't really care whether we become convert or not as long as we submit to everything that the Sharia demands. So, the conflict is between the Constitution and Sharia, because there are laws which prohibit freedom of speech. Here's an example of one. One of the things the Sharia says, if you leave Islam, you should be killed. Now, somehow or another, do I want somebody serving me in office who believes that if he can ever get full power, those who leave Islam should be murdered? You know, I really don't care for killing apostates. So I think there's a big problem with talking to somebody who actually would tell me that they will fulfill the Constitution. Don't they take an oath to fulfill the Constitution?
Yeah.
Well, it's a lie. So if their oath is a lie, after that it just goes downhill real fast as whether I want doing business with me or not.
That's a good point. I mean, simple as that. And you cannot serve two masters. You cannot.
You got that right.
And there it is. One of the comments on this particular forum, the Sharia law does not exist, period. you know. But in true idiotic fashion, this poster goes into this treatise about how Sharia is God's law, God's commandments concerning human actions, which are categorized in different ways. And this is a key sentence, and we don't even have to talk about this, but I just to kind of showcase some people how they think. This poster writes, since God in the Quran and the Sunnah, which in parenthetically Muhammad's deeds, sayings, and way of life, does not often explicitly state which actions belong to which category, it is left to humans to try to figure this out. Again, an abundance, in my view, of I don't want to say insanity, but lack of knowledge, I suppose, because you figure that much differently.
Well, it's interesting to me. It's been 9/11 was in 2001. I would have thought, I'm a natural optimist, I would have thought by now that when you made such remarks in America that people would laugh in your face when you talked about Sharia.
Yeah.
And yet what we find is that people don't know, they don't care, and they don't bother. And that it's there just seems to be a willful ignorance here that I do not understand. And maybe I do understand it, because if I'm right, see, if they're right, we can all go home and sleep, right? Because everything's going to work out fine. There is no Sharia, or Sharia's neat and cool. Sharia's fine. It's just God's law, and that, you know, God loves us all. So, oddly enough, the Quran is insistent on the fact that God does not love us all. He despises the kafir. But setting that aside, is that it's appalling to me that so little is known in this time. And that it's also appalling, and you'll find people standing up and running their mouth who don't know what they're talking about. And don't seem to concern themselves with that. It really concerns me that professionals, journalists, ministers, college professors, are not doing their job. And I in particular blame church schools for not doing their job. I do not know of any school you can go to in America and learn much about Islam. Actually, here's an interesting thing about to measure the universities. One Sunday morning I gave a talk to in a private home to a group of collected Jews who were conservative in their politics. That is, they were not necessarily conservative in the Jewish sense. When I got through, there was a gentleman there who was a full professor at Vanderbilt University. He sits in a university chair, which means his funds come from somewhere else. It's as high in rank as you go. He said to me, "Bill, your talk today is original and provocative and creative, but you would never be allowed to give this talk at Vanderbilt because it would offend the wrong people." Now, carefully, what did he say? He said, "What you've said here, I mean, that's high praise. Your work is original, creative, and provocative." I mean, actually, if you think about it, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, I would say.
And yet you wouldn't be able to give this talk at Vanderbilt University, nor at any other university for that matter. The one time in which I did give a talk at Vanderbilt University, I was not invited by the university, but by a young group who belonged to an organization called Something About Western Civilization. So the schools are supposed to teach the process of how to gain more knowledge, critical thought. Look, our civilization is based upon two principles, and we're not supporting either one of them. The first principle is the intellectual principle of critical thought, scientific thought. That's our moral, our intellectual foundation, and our moral foundation is the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. We may be still remembering some of the golden rule when we must apply it, but we do not remember at all that critical thought is the foundation of our education system. And yet, the professors don't care. They don't give a rip.
Mm.
They're just ideological. They give you your ideological injection, and if you can spout it back enough, then you get an A in the course. This is tragic. So our universities are corrupt, our churches are corrupt, and when I say churches, by the way, let me throw in and just say I'll include the synagogues as well. I don't want to give anybody any slack time here. And yet we're all just sort of like going along our way.
Yeah.
I keep coming, you notice I keep coming back to the theme of we're losing because we're playing a losing, we think like losers, we act like losers, we talk like losers, we plan like losers. You know what happens if you do all those things? We have a loser's mentality. You know when all that lines up? The Muslims want to win and we want to tie. Now, if you have two teams going out onto the field, one wants to win and the other wants to tie, which one are you going to bet on? You don't even need to bet. You know who's going to win.
Exactly. In kind of in closing, I in preparation for our conversation tonight, I was looking at some news, and there was an article that appeared in the Kingston, Ontario newspaper, the Kingston Whig Standard, an article written by Aaliyah Hogben, I believe that's how you pronounce her last name. The title of it is "Sharia and Jurisprudence, Not the Same," and the feature picture is a woman, obviously an Arab woman, a Muslim woman, that is, you know, holding a sign, "Unite and Fight Against Racism." Right away, I thought that sign, not really depicting the true. Racism has really nothing to do with what we're speaking about. Race, this is not a race issue. Right.
Nothing to do.
And
it's a difference of ideology, and
right.
For Christians, it's a difference of faith.
But this was a sign held last weekend in New York City. So, Dr. Warner, I mean, you're obviously in disagreement with that sign, right?
Well, I'll go back to that. I'm not sure what race has to do with Islam. Islam proudly proclaims it has nothing to do with race. I think they want to deal with the race thing because that makes Whitey feel guilty because of he used to own black slaves and he's only recently released them or some such thing as that. I do know that race, I think they use the term racist, and I've stated this in public, is the dirtiest word they can use in polite company. That if we were an impolite company, there's other words we can use which are even fouler. And it has nothing to do at all with race, it's just it's the dirtiest word they know how to call you. And they expect most people, if you call them racist, to buckle and just give up, say, okay, I quit, you call me a racist, whatever you want to do, we can do. Please, I'm not guilty, I'm innocent, I don't want to be part of the racist crowd. I'm not a KKK member. Really, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a straw man.
Okay. Which we've addressed before, and we understand that. Okay. But this is the problem with the narrative that's being rolled out. Now, I'm not sure if you mentioned this or not. The author of this particular article makes reference to the word. Is it FIQH? F-I-Q-H?
Yes, FIQH.
Okay. Which she states is jurisprudence. Is that... I'm not sure what the definition of FIQH is.
It's the judgments of... It's the results of applying Sharia law.
Okay.
They want to say... The term Sharia law is really a misnomer, and I sell a book called Sharia Law for Non-Muslims, and the reason I do that is I want people to open the book, and I want them to have a little understanding. And one of the first things I do is to establish that Sharia is an entire body of knowledge that includes customs, habits, how to pray, theology, but it also includes law. So, legal decision, jurisprudence is the philosophy behind legal decisions. And yes, it does contain all those things, but all she wants to do is muddy the water with words that you don't know, and so you'll be intimidated and think, well, Sharia must be good for some reason.
Okay.
What I say is, why don't you go study some Sharia? And by the way, the book that I based my little 60-page book on Sharia law about, I'm looking at the source it came from, which is Reliance of the Traveler, which is a 1,300-page book in fine print. So what I've done is I only write on Islam from the standpoint of the unbeliever. I don't give a rip about their salvation message. I'm not afraid of their hell, nor do I find the... Well, I guess when I was younger in particular, I'd find the heaven more attractive, but sort of Hugh Hefner, sort of Hugh Hefner in Arab robes.
Dr. Warner, as you and I get older, it holds less of a attraction, I suppose. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, the point is that the Sharia has been made easy to understand, and get out there and understand it. Look, don't trust any Muslim about anything you say about Muhammad. There's only two people you can trust. That's Allah and Muhammad. Don't trust a Muslim. Trust Muhammad. Don't trust a Muslim. Trust Allah.
There you go.
So what I'm preaching here is a form of heresy, but what I'm saying is get back to the basics. These basics used to be very hard to understand, but now they've been made easy to understand. Don't listen to Muslims. Only listen to Muhammad.
That's right, and you're teaching, you're speaking from his own words and Islam's own material. So it's not like
you don't need to make it up.
That's right.
It's bad enough as it is.
In closing, the author of this particular piece that was just published today, and because you like numbers, I'm gonna read this sentence to you here, and you can have fun with this. In comment on this. Now, she writes this. Of the 6,000 or so verses in the Quran, about 80 verses deal with legal matters, and it is reasonable to look into how these have created an entire legal system. As a scholar notes, the Quran is not legal, or is not a legal or constitutional document, as less than 3% of the text deals with legal matters. Now, have at that, because knowing what you said the last, since you, you know, come on, I know your answer, but go ahead and drive that home.
Much more of it deals with Sharia than that. For one thing, let me give you an example. There's page after page on how to pray, which is only briefly mentioned in the Quran. So she can call that legal. It is a Sharia matter. Whether it's a legal matter or not, I don't know. How she determines whether, for instance, in the Sharia we have how a will is to be made out, how a will is to be executed, We have how children are to be raised. So the Sharia contains an awful lot of things. So far as the actual legal content, I will point out one interesting thing. Muhammad was a businessman. That's how he made his money. It's interesting that the longest verse in the Quran is about contract law. So my impression is that I've never tried to use the hard definition of what is purely legal. Instead, I just use the understanding of what goes into the Sharia. But I get a feeling it's more than 3%. Let's deal with jihad, for instance. The jihad is not considered to be a legal principle, and yet the Quran is very clear about jihad. The Sunnah is very clear about jihad, and the Sharia is very clear about jihad, and defines jihad as subjugating the kafir. So now, is that a legal thing, or is it just something to be feared? I don't care whether she calls it legal or not. I don't like jihad.
Amen to that. Very well done, Dr. Bill Warner. You've taken us right to the brink of the end of our program here. One more time, your book, of course, one of your books, Sharia Law for Non-Muslims. Get that at Amazon, right?
Or you can get it from my website.
Okay.
Buy it either place. I like it better if you buy it from me because I make more money.
I love that too. That's right. Okay, and your website is politicalislam.com.
.com.
All right. Now, how do
and like say? Go ahead.
If somebody wants you to autograph the book, can that be done through your website?
You know, if you put it, you know, I've never done that. I'm not very clever in running my business. I just stated that I enjoy selling books, but I never. You know, I've been told by my daughter, Dad, if you'll sell signed copies, you can sell them for more money.
Sure.
So anyway, none of them are signed.
Dr. Warner, I'm going to buy 10 and sell them on eBay for a premium because, you know.
There you go. You'd have one of the few signed copies.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
But anyway, I sell all kinds of books, but they all deal with Allah and Muhammad. They all deal with Islam. And they are all, let me emphasize this again, easy to read. Now, I've been told they're not as easy to read as I say. For instance, my book on Sharia law, a guy said, theoretically, you could read this book in an hour's time, but what happens is you read one page and you go, whoa. He says, you put the book down, you start thinking about that, like, oh my goodness gracious, do you realize the consequences of this? So it's been said that it is a small book, but it takes a time to read because it has so much to digest. Studying Islam is like reading science fiction about a world that where everything has two meanings and everything is upside down. But I find it fascinating.
Wow.
And I love it because once you have some of these facts at your disposal, you can easily persuade anybody in a debate because you'll keep saying, what you said, can you give any reference for it? Because everything I say, I can reference to Allah and Muhammad.
Hmm. Okay. So well-sourced, bottom line.
Yes. That's all I was. One guy said, Bill, your books are really just one vast succession of well-written footnotes.
Wow, that's kind of that's an interesting compliment.
Well, it is, because in my life of Muhammad, as an example, every paragraph has a little index number, like a verse number, so that you can go back to the original source material. If I say that, if you read in my book Muhammad and the Unbelievers, and it says, and Muhammad commanded, kill every Jew you can lay your hands on, you go, oh, that can't be true. Well, there's a little index number that starts the paragraph. You can go to the source text, the Sirah, and that's, you'll find that he did say that in slightly more flowery language.
Very well. Very well done. You know, I'm going to have to get your larger books for reference, but indeed more of your other Sharia law from non-Muslims, more of those copies. You can give them out as gifts. Father's Day is coming, folks. You know, hey, educate your dad, educate that man, and or educate the pastor. Dr. Bill Warner, thank you so much for joining us. Very topical, very on-target information. My goodness.
Thank you. I mean, as you can tell, I enjoy myself more than anybody else when I talk about Islam.
for the reasons, you know, yeah, to educate others, because I'll tell you something, you know your stuff, and I'd love to see you in the debate. Head to head with what's his face? What's the guy from CARE? Have you debated him at all?
No, I've not. I tell you, I'd rather debate your minister.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
I'd rather debate an apologist rather than a Muslim. Everybody wants to see me lock horns with the Muslims. I say I don't really concern myself much with Muslims. I'd rather lock horns with a kafir who believes the crap that Islam puts out. Him I'd love to debate. The guy who's the columnist for the newspaper who writes these apologist articles. But anyway, that's just my fantasy.
Well, I'll tell you what, when we get our pages of responsive emails to this broadcast, which I'm sure we will, we'll send a few over to you. You can debate them. My brother.
Thanks a lot. I'm enjoying myself.
Hey, thank you. And I'm serious, man. I'm going to come down and I'm going to take you out to dinner. I really am.
Good.
All right, brother. Thank you, doctor. All right, folks. That was Dr. Bill Warner. My goodness, politicalislam.com, and seriously, the book he has written, and I do have a copy, Sharia Law for Non-Muslims, I think that's, what, now 5 years old, maybe 6 years old, I do have a copy of that, extremely well written, but I want to get one of the, hint, give me
the autograph one?
No, the bigger one.
Okay,
because I really want to get into the,
You got a birthday next year, right?
Well, you know, Sunday's Father's Day.
I know. I'm messing around. Folks, just real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you missed the first hour of the show, at least the second segment of the first hour, we had Andrew Kerr on. Now, Andrew Kerr has done a great job of investigating some potential fraud-like activity within David Brock's political super PAC organizations.
Yes.
Go to thecitizensaudit.com. And click on the article that's from June 1st. I believe it's right at the top of the website. And it starts with the word announcement. And there it gives a detailed description of what he's trying to do. He's assembled a team, including Scott Gessler, the former Secretary of State of Colorado, a forensic accountant named Christina Cook, and others to pursue a case and file a complaint with the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, against Media Matters. They're running these super PACs, these political organizations, and money's funneling from one to the other illegally when you have non-political money going into political organizations and vice versa. And all the people that he has surrounded himself with agree that this is actionable information and could go far. He's trying to raise money, so there is a donate button there. If you can donate, please do. If you can't donate, spread that far and wide, that page.
Exactly.
Spread it on social media, Facebook, Twitter, however it can be disseminated to other people. Make sure you do that. Also, if you go on that article, there is a pledge you can sign, and that pledge is going to be used to update people and show the level of support that is behind this endeavor. So make sure you do that. And also, on HagmanReport.com, there's a number of articles, original content articles from Liz Croken, Peter Choka, and also Sergeant Tim. The two that Liz Croken has up are The Virginia Shooting is Tied to Sex Trafficking and Seth Rich, Evidence Disappearing. Both of those are on the front page of HagmanReport.com. So make sure you go there and spread those articles as well.
Do me a favor as well. Go to American Thinker and look up Peter Chalka's article, The Murdoch Boys. You can search his name as an author, Chowka, and make a comment on that and post that on social media, that particular or column that he wrote. It's a 4,000 word column. I think that was really kind of ties up his three previous articles, but I've got a reason for doing it because it contains a quote of mine, and I really think that the word has to get out there of what is taking place to the media, the conservative media.
Scott Greer from the Daily Caller. Were you finished?
No, two more things real quick. I just want to mention this, and then you can have it all. You're going to be seeing over the next 72 hours an amazing number of pieces of information that's going to be published by the Washington Post. One already is leaks coming from within the Mueller camp, and this is designed to take down Donald Trump. And the last thing is on the racial division or the ideological divide, Several shots were fired at a truck flying Make America Great Again flag on I-465 out of Indianapolis.
I believe there's a couple of black kids in their 20s fired at a truck with the Magna sign.
Yeah, so you've got the leaks, you've got the hatred and the actual civil war in progress, as Dr. Michael Savage talks about, and then you've got the political threats taking place. So go ahead and finish it out.
Well, I just wanted to make sure. I was going to post this tonight, but I'm going to leave the website alone for the next 10 to 12 hours or so. This from the Daily Caller. Media to America. Don't politicize an obvious act of political violence. Scott Greer has been a guest on our show a number of times, and he's written an awesome, pretty big article on the Daily Caller. Again, the title is Media to America. Don't politicize an obvious act of political violence. And he points out in the very beginning of the article, he says, in the span of a few weeks, two crazy Bernie supporters have committed acts of violence against innocent Americans. He cites the first one. In May, Jeremy Christian stabbed and killed two men after berating two Muslim women on Portland, Oregon train. And then he cites yesterday's shooting of James Hodgkinson, opening fire on congressional Republicans. He says, the big difference between the two events is that only one was seized upon as a disturbing example of the rising political violence in the nation. The incident, the media was able to pin on the right. Christensen's stabbing was depicted as a deliberate act of white supremacist terror, even though he was a supporter for many left-wing causes and had a desire to murder all Trump supporters and Jeff Sessions, and the fact that his victims were all white anyway, that, even though he was a leftist guy, they tried to blame that as right-wing political violence. Even President Trump was blamed for the violence and was often put down for taking too long to condemn it. And they go on to say, meanwhile, these same folks in the media and politics are now strongly urging all Americans not to politicize a leftist trying to assassinate Republican politicians. Suddenly, the people who whip up outrage anytime a story pops out that fits their narrative transform themselves into simply wanting social harmony and decency after an attack, a response we usually only see after Islamic terror. And then it goes to go through a number of instances where the left-wing media pushed a story that Trump somehow was responsible or is responsible for violence or hate crimes, even though a lot of these hate crimes turn out to be fake, and how this, when there actually is political violence carried out by the left, like we've seen so much in the last 6 months, that especially this shooting that involved congressmen, Scott Greer is pointing out the media, how they're so hypocritical. And we've seen this before. There's been a number of times in our country where political violence has happened, from the Revolutionary War to the Civil War to the Civil Rights Movement to the protesting of the Vietnam War there have been instances in the past where political violence has happened. But it's different this time. And I agree that it is different this time, that we're dealing with a whole different set of circumstances, a whole different mindset of the people. And not only that, the media is on the side, the mainstream media and the deep state and the people at the top. These are the people who are pushing for this violence, and that is different than any other time in history.
But I'm going to tell you right now, I will fight back.
Of course.
I want to end this on a happy, or not a happy note, but kind of a humorous note. Don't be like Lawrence John Ripple, 71 years old, from Kansas City, Kansas. He couldn't spend another day with his wife. He walked into a bank in Kansas City, handed the teller a note saying, I've got a gun, give me money, sat down, waited to be arrested.
This happens like every year.
Okay, because he said, I can't spend another moment. I want to go to jail. I want to be in jail rather than being at home. Anyway, long story short, he was sentenced by the judge, who sentenced him to, guess what?
House arrest.
House arrest.
Perfect.
There you go. So that should put a smile on your face. There you go, Lawrence John Ripple. That's what you get. But folks, very serious. Expect a lot of news out of D.C. inside the Beltway. More leaks damaging to Donald Trump, and it's horrible. Killing the presidency is what's taking place, and the republic.
We will see you back here tomorrow. Have a great evening.